Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. Donald Trump fell asleep at his trial yesterday. First trial, first day, first session, fell asleep, sitting upright at the trial that could end with him going to prison. During the trial, day one, in the morning. But it's Biden with the stamina problem. It's Biden who's too old. Trump fell asleep at the defense table. But we should be worried about Biden. Trump fell asleep during discussion of his own tweets, his own threats, his own lawyer's insistence that this is the greatest witch hunt in forever, and Abraham Lincoln got off easily compared to this, and whatever else they said. In his own defense, he fell asleep. Don't sleep on Donald Trump. He'll do it for you. To quote the New York Times at 12:10 p.m. EDT, Trump appears to be sleeping. His head keeps drooping down, and his mouth goes slack. Well, who in the hell can blame him? God knows that's been my reaction to his bullshit for 9 years. The reporter who posted that, Maggie Haberman, shortly thereafter went on CNN and said that at one point, one of his lawyers tried to hand him a note, and he was so asleep, he didn't know it was happening. His mouth going slack and his head drooping onto his chest, she added later in the paper. I'm just guessing here. Maybe Trump needs some Adderall or something. If this had happened to Biden, if this had happened to Biden at wherever he might possibly be, that could be, what, 1/1,000th as serious as Trump's trial involving porn stars and payoffs and election interference and prison time? If this had happened to Biden, it would be the only thing on the news, the only thing on television, the only thing on the internet, the only thing in all forms of extrasensory communications. Instead, from the Pool Reporter at 3:44 p.m., after the jurors leave the courtroom, Trump stares at D.A. Alvin Bragg. Then Trump turns his eyes to the press pool. As he exits, he glares at New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman for several seconds as he walks out. Don't worry, Maggie. He'll probably decide he just dreamt it all. And the media will go back to telling voters that they should be worried about how with it Joe Biden is. Joe Biden, and not, as he was dubbed yesterday, Don Snorleone. Who, by the way, was not sleeping for himself. He was sleeping for the sake of the January 6th hostages. America, woo. The ultimate day one headline is Trump went to his first trial yesterday and fell asleep and then, unfortunately, awoke and then they let him go home. Unfortunately. Bedazzled by the historic first, an ex-president on trial, like that's top 100 among the norms Trump has urinated on in the last decade. Bedazzled by that, the media missed the surprising, almost shocking real headline. This trial will not just be about Trump paying Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet and thus interfering with the election. And this will not just be about Trump's comically perfectly named pal David Pecker playing catch and kill with every story that might hurt defendant J. Trump and thus interfering with the election. This, the prosecution says, and the judge has confirmed he will permit, will be about the entirety of the arrangement between Trump and his Pecker to interfere with the election, including not just true stuff that Trump got Pecker to keep out of the public's flow of information, but also the fake stuff that Trump got Pecker to put into that flow of information. Fake stuff that Trump got to read in advance and approve. To quote prosecutor Joshua Steinglass, here is a list of National Enquirer headlines timed perfectly to assist candidate Trump. They attacked Ben Carson. There will be evidence that the defendant said he was particularly pleased with this article. There will be the evidence of the stories about Ted Cruz, including an alleged role of his family in the assassination of JFK and against Marco Rubio, unquote. The judge will also let Karen McDougal testify about her affair with Trump and how Trump buried coverage of that. From the moment the prosecution started talking, they were hammering home the essence here. This is not a trial about Trump paying off a porn star to keep their sex secret from his wife or even from the public. This is a trial about Trump interfering with the 2016 election outcome by illegally suppressing facts that the voters should have known and evaluated for themselves. Voters in the general election and voters in the primary. Trump is not on trial for hush money. Trump is not on trial for banging a porn star. Stop putting that in your headlines. Trump is on trial for his favorite crime, the one he never stops talking about. Trump is on trial for election interference. Every time this case is reduced to hush money, or hush money that was then illegally disguised as tax-deductible business expenses, and I've been guilty of reducing it myself, it reduces its seriousness. It becomes, yes, we deducted the porn star under Rule 321-7 parentheses A-2328642, banging porn stars. No, this allegation is as serious as any evidence that Trump conspired with Russia or took Russian help or conspired with WikiLeaks or with Fox or with any other media outlet to deliberately spread falsehoods or concealed truths to deceive the electorate in 2016 or 2020 or after the election in 2020. Trump is on trial for organized, systemic, illegal, and coordinated election interference. Call it that. The hush money is only part of the picture. The attempt to deduct it all from his taxes is only another part. To have his porn star cake and eat it too, apt as the imagery might be. Amid the Trump grandstanding and the procedurals that Shakespeare summed up as the law's delay, they seated exactly zero jurors yesterday out of the first 100 or so. There was a subheadline and two other laugh lines besides him falling asleep while, you know, sitting upright at a trial that could end with him going to jail. The prosecution noted, even before jury selection began, or attempted jury selection began, that Trump has already repeatedly violated the gag order just expanded by State Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan. Hell, he violated apparently while in the car on the way to the courthouse at 100 Center Street yesterday morning with more slanders and muddled threats against Michael Cohen. They want Trump held in contempt of court, which would not result in him having bail revoked and going to prison. The first punishment would be a fine of $3,000. Ooh, $3,000. Oh, no, that'll keep Trump awake at night or in the courtroom. $3,000 is like charging you or me a penny. It's ludicrous. Send him to Rikers. Merchan will conduct a hearing about this a week from today, underscoring that we are looking at May before there is any testimony in this case. Now the other laugh lines. At least two Trump whores raced to his defense by demanding something be done at the trial that their side condemned while recounting another famous trial last week. Not that moral consistency nor personal consistency means anything to Congressman Byron Donalds or thug Fox News commentators Jesse Waters or Clay Travis. Clay Travis, who has drifted over from idiotic sports commentary to idiotic political commentary like a drunk driving an 18-wheel tractor trailer. Donalds, first. He tried to get prospective jurors to lie under oath to the court about not having prejudged the case. I mean, what a great idea this is if you want to go to jail.
My plea is to the people of Manhattan that may sit on this trial. Please do the right thing for this country. Everybody's allowed to have their political viewpoints, but the law is supposed to be blind and no respecter of persons. This is a trash case. There is no crime here. And if there is any potential for a verdict, they should vote not guilty.
I'm in Manhattan. I could run right over Byron. Byron Donalds is not a lawyer. Hell, he's only technically a congressman. But that same idea, poison the jury pool by lying to the judge that you have not prejudged the case, that was demanded by the fascist commentator Clay Travis. Quoting him, if you're a Trump supporter in New York City who is a part of the jury pool, do everything you can to get seated on the jury and then refuse to convict as a matter of principle, dooming the case by a hung jury. It's the most patriotic thing you could possibly do. Travis apparently has not been able to get a client in nearly 20 years, but he is a lawyer, graduated from law school at Vanderbilt. He's a lawyer. After encouraging prospective jurors to lie, he was a lawyer. Moreover, on Travis's side of the political spectrum, just last week, in fact, just yesterday, after O.J. Simpson's death, they were insisting, Jesse Waters said this yesterday afternoon on Fox, they were insisting that O.J. Simpson was found not guilty because a juror lied about not prejudging that case. Now they want the same alleged illegality to be used to save Trump. Nice job, Byron Donalds. Nice job, Jesse Waters in particular, of forging a comparison between Trump and O.J. Simpson. Thank you, kids. Last laugh. Was I the only one who heard it? Trump's pre-trial whining to the media when he got drowned out by a dog barking? Doesn't anybody notice this? Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
This is an assault on America. Nothing like this is nonsense. It should never have been brought. It doesn't deserve anything like this. There is no case of outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. This is a persecution.
I mean, the second and third times there sounded a little different from the first, and it was more like a police radio, maybe, echoing in a hallway. Or a human barking like a dog, but we are picking nits at this point. Trump makes his big pre-trial martyrdom statement, his weekly Norma Desmond moment. Watch me nail myself to the cross. The thing he does just before falling asleep in the courtroom, he does this again, and he gets drowned out by a dog barking or something sounding like a dog barking. This was a big day for American justice.
This is an assault on America. Nothing like-
drowned out by a dog. Or by not a dog, but an incredible simulation. And then crazy old man falls asleep, sitting upright. Only in America. Trump falling asleep in court takes on almost allegorical proportions, given what is now unmistakable in this campaign. The polls have turned, and with them, the vibes. The media rats are not yet racing back onto what turns out to be a not sinking Joe Biden ship. The frontrunners have yet to do a 180. The wind is blowing their own crap back into their faces. The faces of the reportorial purveyors of the conventional wisdom. And no, they won't admit it, but I think it's coming. Jonathan Martin of Politico got so close over the weekend. He wrote a column headlined, "Trump the Frontrunner? Not so fast, as foreign leaders trek to Mar-a-Lago to restore their ties to the once and future president, they might be surprised to learn that the election isn't as sealed as they seem to think." As condescending and as self-inflating and as egotistical as that is, who said the election was sealed, Mr. Martin? Do you own a mirror? Do any of you own mirrors? Martin almost made up for that by as remarkable a near confession as I have seen from a Beltway insider since I went into the news in 1997. Promoting his column on the internet, declaring that after all, maybe they were all wrong to ignore reality, Jonathan Martin wrote, quote, "I'll say it. There's an elite tendency to assign Trump a better chance to win than he merits to show this time you're not out of touch," unquote. You think? Notice Martin never specifies that the elite he's referring to includes the American news media, which it does. His piece was clearly inspired by British Foreign Minister David Cameron's visit to see Trump. And by the way, David Cameron, the man who enabled the Brexit vote, just because the four prime ministers who followed him have been worse than him does not make him a good choice to represent the UK on the world stage, UK. Anyway, back to Jonathan Martin. This is, after all, the same man who wrote last November a piece titled "How Biden Can Still Turn It Around." 12 paragraphs in, Martin noted, as if it were the answer to a trivia question, that Trump, quote, is an exiled strongman who's taken over a traditional political party and is attempting to reclaim office to consolidate power and punish his enemies with little regard for the Constitution. Just ask him. And then finally, Martin got around to, if Biden thinks the country is on the line, he should act like it. And literally, after just that one sentence, when you think, oh, here comes the stuff about how Biden and the Jonathan Martins of this world and all of the media should be calling Trump out day after day, hour after hour, in ever more dire and knife-edged words like fascist and Nazi and would-be Hitler. We find out what Politico's Jonathan Martin thought Biden had to change to save representative government in this country. He had to, according to Mr. Martin last November, quote, stop calling David Axelrod a prick. Calling David Axelrod a prick, as a person who has heard Biden use the word says he does in private, is not a strategy to win 270 electoral votes. Well, now you know why I never got elected president. Then Martin complained that Rahm Emanuel and Jennifer O'Malley Dillon and Ron Klain should be running Biden's campaign, that was the key issue here. That would be the Ron Klain who just last week F-bombed the Biden campaign in a speech in public and did it on tape because he's such a genius he doesn't know enough to not pee inside the tent. By the way, the Martin complained about the elites that almost got to reality. It got 34 retweets. And same weekend, Martin's employers at Politico were good enough to bury their own poll showing that Biden now leads Trump nationally by 2. Apparently, they did this because the poll was supposed to be about the election and the Middle East, and the horse race number was just incidental, and they didn't publish anything that didn't touch on the Middle East, like, who's ahead in the presidential polling after weeks and months and years of emphasizing that Trump was ahead? Who's ahead now? That doesn't matter in the Middle East at all. The way the New York Times did the same thing when its poll in late February had Trump up by 5, and its new poll Saturday had Biden trailing Trump by only 1, and it actually published this subheadline: "The president's popularity has ticked up slightly," even though the simple reality of, you know, math is that Biden, in going from 5 points down to 4 points down, erased 80% of Trump's margin in 6 weeks. The Redfield and Wilton poll is out. It has it tied at 41, as they note their first poll where Trump was not ahead since last July. "I would feel better if they weren't British pollsters, but they did ask Americans," they assure us. Also, they find Biden's approval number is now only 6 points underwater. The Associated Press and NORC, N-O-R-C, did some deep diving based on how frequently supporters have actually voted. You voted in the 2018 midterms, the 2020 presidential election, the 2022 midterms. Biden is ahead in your group, 50-39. You voted in only one of those. Trump is ahead, 45-33. You haven't voted at all in any of them. It's Trump 44-26. In other words, Trump's support largely depends on him getting votes from non-voters or rare voters. Wagering on the election has swung wildly. It was all Trump at the Polymarket betting site, particularly. Now at the Polymarket betting site, it's Biden favored 62-26. Their official forecast is tied 45-45. That's only for gambling purposes. But with all that as the backdrop, the polls continue to break, either showing Biden ahead where he was behind or just barely behind where he was lots behind. With that as the backdrop, I will say to Jonathan Martin and all the other cognoscente who did not do what I did, who did not leave the media oligarchy and go out on their own and tried thinking for themselves for, say, a stretch of 6.5 minutes, I will say to them, just to borrow a phrase I heard recently, have you noticed? I'll say it. There's an elite tendency to assign Trump a better chance to win than he merits, to show this time you're not out of touch. Or to update it just slightly in the wake of yesterday's in-court developments, to show this time you're not asleep. He fell asleep at the defense table. If Biden did that, a new network would be opened up today called the Biden Fell Asleep Network. Also of interest here, the fallout continues from as cynical a confession from an American politician since Trump's Fifth Avenue shooting boast. Governor Sununu. "I'm not sure he's a human being." And speaking of that, the right-wing comedian who was too gross, even for Senate Republicans and their staffers. His set was supposed to go 30 minutes. It only went 10 minutes before they threw him out. When you hear who it was, you will be shocked it even went 10 minutes. That's next. This is Countdown, ladies and germs.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Still ahead of us on this all-new edition of Countdown. Statistically, he may have been the greatest pitcher to ever call the original Yankee Stadium home. But 50 years later, he's still known first for swapping wives and swapping lives with a teammate. But I will always remember the late Fritz Peterson because when I was a kid, I cost him a no-hit game. I really did. Next in things I promised not to tell. First, still more new idiots to talk about. The daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens. As usual at the start of the week, way too many for just 3 trophies. Five who constitute today's worst persons in the world. Crowd together so we can get you all in the same picture. We start with the Zinc Trophy. 5th place, Elon Musk and Marjorie Bitter Greene. A lot of people suck up to Musk online, but according to the independent journalist Preston Stewart, a recent post on Telegram reads, and it's translated from the Russian, "Thanks to Elon Musk for helping his Russian counterpart." It's on the account of the Rusich Group, an arm of Putin's army that is looked on with disgust by the Wagner Group. The head of this outfit is a self-avowed Nazi. Meanwhile, Marjorie Greene says, quote, "It's anti-Semitic to make Israeli aid contingent on funding Ukrainian Nazis," unquote. Marge. The Nazis in Ukraine are Russians, sent there by your boy Putin, and helped to get there by your boy Sleepy Trump. Dozing J. Trump. Your views of religion, Marge, better be 100% wrong, or you're going to spend a long time in hell. Moving to Copper and CNN, and how dare the network of record cancel their best news show, King Charles. The Gayle King Charles Barkley Weekly Show, it's going to save CNN, don't you know that? The end has come for this last and most bizarre of the memorials to the William Henry Harrison of CNN presidents, Chris Licht. King Charles was canceled after last Wednesday's edition, per the New York Post. It drew really sad audiences of 412,000 total viewers and 89,000 in the coveted 25 to 54 age demo. CNN will doubtless replace it by extending the Abby Phillip News Hour to five nights a week from its current schedule of Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 10. Last Tuesday, Ms. Phillips' newscast drew 452,000 total viewers and 88,000 in the coveted 25 to 54 age demo. That's right. The new show ratings are 1,000 people worse than the old show ratings. This is CNN. LeBron's worse. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. If you're beginning, like me, to get the sense that his campaign is there to soak up all the people Trump thinks are too crazy to work for him, yeah, you may be right. Angela Stanton King is the Black Voter Engagement Director for the Kennedy campaign, and she has posted and then deleted a homophobic attack against the founder of a Black pro-Trump conservative group. His name is Deontay Johnson, and Angela Stanton King called Johnson, quote, in this deleted tweet, an open, flaming, feminine, closet, gay, how is he gonna lead heterosexual Black men to the Republican Party, unquote. Now, you may notice the homophobia and the virulence. You may notice that. I noticed that she attacked this man because she wondered how he could build support, not for her candidate, who is Kennedy, but instead how he could build support for not her candidate, Trump. Huh. Trump, who she supported in 2020, who, when she went to the White House in February, she celebrated Black History Month with him, and who then a year later, Angela Stanton King, who'd spent 2 years in prison after being convicted as part of a car theft ring, she was pardoned by Trump. This was just before she went on the Dr. Phil show to attack transgendered people like her own child, and then unleashed an obscenity-riddled video on social media attacking her own child and Dr. Phil and the doctors and now she's working for Kennedy and going full homophobe on behalf of Trump. It's almost as if she's living her real life as a closeted Trump supporter. Don't tell anybody. The runner-up, worser, funny man Rob Schneider. Politico reporting that last holiday season, the Senate Working Group's annual gala was headed by the former Saturday Night Live cast member, Rob Schneider, former as in 30 years ago, literally left the show in 1994. 150 Republican Senate staffers, including 40 chiefs of staff, some senators, recoiled, according to Politico, as Schneider, who had promised to keep it clean, made racially offensive and gross jokes, many aimed at Asian people, including one about, quote, Korean whorehouses. At 10 minutes in, Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith walked out, and the executive director of the group stopped Schneider and escorted him off stage. Do you realize how racially offensive something has to be to get Republicans to walk out of a free dinner? But the winner, the worst, Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire. I suppose nothing should surprise me anymore, but even nearly 48 hours after the fact, I have still never seen anything as brazenly cynical and un-American as what this asshole did on ABC Sunday morning with George Stephanopoulos. I mean, this was a loud, seemingly principled Nikki Haley supporter. Remember Nikki Haley? And Sununu is now not just backing Trump, but he's making no effort to even rationalize backing Trump. Sununu said the criminal cases, the prosecution, quote, has been going on for more than a year and his poll numbers never go down. George Stephanopoulos countered, but you're going to politics. I'm asking about right and wrong. Sununu answered, this is about politics. If you missed it, it gets worse. Please explain, Stephanopoulos asked. Given the fact you believe Trump contributed to an insurrection, how can you say we should have him back in the Oval Office? Sununu's answer, for me, it's not about him as much as it is having a GOP administration. Stephanopoulos was dumbfounded. But he will be the president. That doesn't make any sense to me. You believe that a president who contributed to an insurrection should be president again? And then the kill shot from this worm Sununu, as does 51% of America, George. Forget the math for a second. Trump has never come close to having 51% of support in America. It was 46 in 2016. It was 47 in 2020. What Sununu is saying here is he and other Republicans who know Trump is amoral, anti-democracy, a thug, a criminal, a madman, they will not let that stop them from supporting him because they have all joined a mob. And what are you going to do about it, you lousy moral losers? What are you going to do about their mob? I don't give a damn what happens to the Sununus. The father was H.W. Bush's chief of staff, said to hell with a lot of them. But the more I listened to this interview, the more I kept hoping maybe Governor Sununu is drunk. Maybe he's having some sort of brain episode. Because that would be a better explanation, either one of them, than this explanation that Chris Sununu is our Franz von Papen. You know who Franz von Papen is? We have a bunch of them actually now. He was the conservative chancellor of Germany. And it was he who made the deal after Hitler lost the 1932 German presidential election to appoint him chancellor, Hitler, so that the weakened winner of the presidential election would get the political and parliamentary support of the Nazis in the Reichstag, and Hitler would have to fall in line with a non-Nazi government. Von Papen had it all arranged. President Hindenburg's 11-man cabinet would consist of Hitler and two other Nazis and eight non-Nazis. Within 2 months, Papen told a colleague, we'll have Hitler in a corner so tight that he will squeak. In point of fact, within 2 months, Hitler managed to suspend habeas corpus, suspend freedom of the press, suspend public assembly, suspend freedom of speech, and he opened Dachau. A year later, he put Papen under house arrest, and a decade later, Franz von Papen was one of the defendants at Nuremberg. Governor Chris, what are you going to do? He's popular. Either we keep him or we keep democracy. So I guess we keep him. Von Sununu, today's worst person in the world! Squeak!
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today. To the number number one story on the countdown and things I promised not to tell. And last Thursday, Fred Ingalls Peterson died. You probably do not know that name. You probably do not know the name he was better known by, Fritz Peterson. He was a pitcher for the New York Yankees from 1966 until he was traded to the Cleveland Indians in 1974. He later also pitched for the Texas Rangers. He was also a hockey announcer in New York in his pitching days with the Yankees. He worked with John Sterling, who to this day does Yankee games. John Sterling and Fritz Peterson were the broadcasters for the New York Raiders of the World Hockey Association in 1972-73. But Fritz Peterson, when he is remembered at all, is remembered for one of the most spectacular off-the-field incidents in the history of baseball. When, in his eighth year with the New York Yankees, in spring training of 1973, he and his teammate Mike Kekich announced they had swapped lives. That was their clean spin on what had happened, that they had been, in the terminology of the day, wife swappers. Fritz Peterson had fallen in love with his fellow Yankee pitcher Mike Kekich's wife, and Mike Kekich had fallen in love with his fellow Yankee pitcher Fritz Peterson's wife. So the two men simply moved out of their homes and into each other's. The Peterson-Kekich marriage, which happened shortly thereafter, after obviously the divorces, the Fritz Peterson marriage to the former Suzanne Kekich lasted until the day Fritz Peterson died last week. Not so much for Mike Kekich. Mike Kekich and the ex Mrs. Peterson broke up, thus, of course, leaving to the impossibly bad taste joke that Mike Kekich was left waiting for the wife to be named later in the trade. I regret to tell you that that was my joke. Fritz Peterson, though, was so much more than that event. He was a great Yankee pitcher, and in fact, such a great Yankee pitcher that when the old Yankee Stadium, which ran from 1923 to 2008, when it closed, ESPN did the calculations, and of all the pitchers who threw more than 950, nearly 1,000 innings inside Yankee Stadium, all the Hall of Famers who pitched for the Yankees in all of that span of 86 seasons, the number one earned run average, the pitcher who gave up the fewest earned runs per appearance in Yankee Stadium, was Fritz Peterson. He was a great pitcher. Just before the Yankees traded him in 1974, he injured his arm. We did not know that at the time. When the Yankees traded Fritz Peterson in 1974, a couple of friends of mine and I put together a huge banner to hang at the ballpark protesting the trade. Fritz Peterson and a couple of other popular Yankee pitchers to the Cleveland Indians for a first baseman. Like, you couldn't get a first baseman anywhere. Well, Fritz Peterson's career was eventually over, but the first baseman was named Chris Chambliss, and he hit a home run that won the American League pennant for the Yankees in 1976 and was the stalwart of their infield for seven seasons. In any event, none of those stories, none of those bad jokes, none of those wife-swapping tales is my Fritz Peterson story. It is the story that will always be remembered as long as I remember anything about baseball, largely because my hand still hurts. Cast your mind back to a time when things like this actually happened. In 1973, my dad was in the second season of being a season ticket holder at Yankee Stadium. The cost for this, for four tickets to each Yankee game, was $1,000, plus parking, which I think was another $50. In any event, they didn't play 81 separate games. They played a lot of doubleheaders, so technically these were four tickets to about, 70 days worth of baseball. But there were four tickets to every game of the season. It cost $1,000. By the time the new Yankee Stadium opened in 2009, there were individual tickets that cost $1,000 and more than that. But in those old days, we few season ticket holders, seeing those last dreadful Yankee teams before the Renaissance under George Steinbrenner, we knew each other. And so, as a very long 4th of July weekend approached in the year 1973, the folks who sat in the front row of the row we sat in the fourth box from the field, This was just behind first base, just to the far end, the outfield end of the Yankee dugout. The folks in the front row, who we'd come to know because they went to a lot of games, as did my father and my mother and my sister and I, they said as they were leaving during, I think, the Sunday game before the 4th of July, which was a Wednesday that week. So we're talking Sunday, July 1st. They said, listen, we're going to the Hamptons for the weekend. Would you like to sit in our box? To me, knowing I was a huge fan. And I said, "Of course." They said, okay, let's fix that with the usher. There was an usher. There were ushers at ballparks who showed you to your seats and cleaned them off for you. And you were supposed to tip them. And we did. And we knew them all by name. There was Irving, who is a great friend of my young sister. There was Mr. McCarthy, who was in charge of the entire area's worth of ushers. There was Frenchie. There was a whole bunch of them who used to, by the way, there were so many empty seats at Yankee Stadium in those days that when their days were done, they would come over and sit down along with all the groundskeepers near our seats behind first base because there was plenty of good seats available for the ushers and the groundskeepers and everybody else who worked at Yankee Stadium. I knew some of those people literally until I was in my 50s. Some of them still working and some of them just friends. In any event, so the folks from the front row, whose name has been lost to time, they walked me over to where Mr. McCarthy, the chief of ushers for, I guess, the box seats on the first base side of Yankee Stadium, where he was. And they said, listen, Mr. McCarthy, we're going to be away next week for the Red Sox series on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. We're going to be out in the Hamptons. Would you let this young man sit in our seats, make sure he's okay down there? This is the way this worked. They didn't think about selling the tickets because, after all, a season ticket was $1,000. Each ticket cost $4. So the front row seats at Yankee Stadium for a Yankee-Red Sox series would have been $16 for a game. Maybe if there were a pennant race involving the Yankees and the Red Sox, you might be able to get a little bit more for them, but there were all sorts of rules against selling tickets for more than face value. Maybe they could have gotten their money back. And if they were going to the Hamptons for the week in 1973, they didn't need the $16 or the $32 for two games or the $48 for three games. So I had one of the great experiences of my life spread out in front of me. Not only could I go and sit in the front row by myself without my parents, without my sister, and concentrate on the game and see the game without anybody in front of me, and everybody was always standing up, no ushers, no fans, nothing but me and Yankee Stadium to concentrate on my future career as a sportscaster and enjoy the Yankees, who I dearly, dearly loved then, but no longer. Not only that, but it was the Yankees and the Red Sox, 4th of July, 14 years old, pretty much ideal, and pretty much the last idealized moment in between being a kid, being a boy, and becoming a young man. I'd be going to college in 2 years. This was like it, that transitional moment, and I'd get to sit in the front row and watch my Yankees, and yet also in the back of my mind, think about what it would be like to be announcing that game without any of the distractions of the people walking in front of you, or your sister needing to go to the restroom, or anything else happening back in those seats, way in the back, four boxes from the front row. So now the big day comes. The weather is lovely. It's 4th of July weekend, except 4th of July weekend runs from Monday through Friday, because the 4th of July is on a Wednesday. So this is Monday, July 2nd, 1973, and Fritz Peterson is going to pitch for the Yankees against the Red Sox. And Fritz Peterson was, I won't claim he was my favorite player, but he certainly was top five. He was always reliable, always pitched well at Yankee Stadium, as those later statistics proved. And he was an affable guy, and he played a bunch of pranks, and I understood what it meant for him to have changed wives and traded wives with one of his teammates, who, by the way, Mike Kekich, the Yankees got rid of him almost immediately. They traded him to Cleveland in 1973. I think he was gone by the time of this series. So Fritz Peterson's kids went with the Kekiches to, I don't remember it. In any event, Kekich is gone, Fritz Peterson is gone, and I am in the front row in the box by myself. It's important to remember I am in the front row, I think for the first time after seven seasons as a fan in which I never sat in the front row. Close to it, but never in the front row, never bordering on the field of play, never literally inches from the warning track that was the field. that magical line defined by Burt Lancaster in the movie Field of Dreams. You step over into it and you are part of the game. You step off of it and you are gone. Well, I'm right on the line and I'm only 14 and I think this is the big time. Yankees and the Red Sox, scoreless in the first inning, top of the second inning. Orlando Cepeda is the designated hitter. This is the first year of the designated hitter in the American League. Who knew what a bad idea it would be? He strikes out. Fritz Peterson has retired the first four men he's faced for the Red Sox. And then it happens. Rico Petrocelli, a New York-born Boston Red Sox, whose brother was a policeman who often worked at Yankee Stadium during Red Sox-Yankees games and looked just like Rico Petrocelli. Rico Petrocelli, the third baseman of the Red Sox, a member of their great 1967 team who then stayed with them through the 1976 season and was on the 1975 American League Championship team too. Rico Petrocelli pops a ball up behind first base where I'm sitting. And I don't mean near where I'm sitting. The ball is hit to where I am sitting. In those days, pop-ups seemed to go far higher into the sky than they do nowadays. At least that's the way it looked. Maybe it was the steepness of Yankee Stadium. Maybe it was the fact that I was sitting there under these circumstances, gifted this front row seat at Yankee Stadium, something I could never buy nor achieve in any other way. I don't know, but it seemed like the ball was in the air for upwards of half an hour. And you have to now see it the way I saw it. I stood up. I knew the ball was near me in a way that it had never been near me before. There'd been foul balls that had come a few inches away. One of those friends from Yankee Stadium I mentioned, the vendor Al Marcus, caught a ball maybe 10 feet from me once during a Milwaukee Brewers-New York Yankee game in 1970, flipped it to me. All of it was captured on television. Apparently that was my TV debut. He'd made a great catch and flipped it to me. That was the closest a foul ball had ever come to me. But this one I knew was going to be far closer than that. In fact, it was coming right to my box. It was coming right to my seat. And as I looked up and I could see the steepness of Yankee Stadium, then 50 years old and about to be closed for renovations, I could see it still in the air, a little white dot high up above the top of the lights, these built-in lights that were added to the stadium in 1946, and thus they rose another story or two on top of this gigantic, majestic Yankee Stadium. I can see the ball getting larger and larger as it came down towards me, and I know that I'm going to adjust to try to use the railing behind me as support as I reach up to catch the ball. And again, I'm now turning. I'm now turning with my back not towards the stands, but my back is now going to be towards the field because I'm reaching with my arms in the air and I'm reaching with my butt against this railing to try to get a good stance to catch this ball barehanded. Now, common sense from that point on in my life would have told me to run to the nearest exit under any circumstances, get under the overhang of the upper deck. Do not try to catch a ball that has been hit more than 27 stories into the air. All you can do is break your hand or your head. This may be the last moment of your life, 14-year-old Keith. Get the hell out of there. But this is not even the most important part of this. Somewhere in the process in which I turned my back to the field, I forgot completely that I had been gifted these tickets for the front row. To me, in that moment in which my concentration was on making this catch, and I was not a good baseball player, that's why I became an announcer. The concentration to make this catch erased everything else from my mind, including where I was. To my mind, I defaulted back to my seats. And to some measure, my dad was not with us that night, just my sister and my mother. I was trying to protect my mother and my sister from this flying object. Plus, I wanted to catch it. I wanted my own foul ball from a Red Sox-Yankee game, pitched by Fritz Peterson, hit by Rico Petrocelli. I'm going to catch that ball, and I am in my box, and I am protecting my sister and my mother, but I'm not in my box. I'm in the front row with my back to the field. I have no idea what's happening around me. I don't realize that there's anybody there. I don't realize that there are any fans there. It's just me and this baseball. and I reach up and I do not lean back. I do not lean forward. I do not lean sideways. My arms are above my head and the ball hits my hand and it feels like I have had a spike driven through my palm, into my arm, through my arm, into my torso and down to my feet. It hurts a lot immediately, but that really doesn't register for a few seconds because what I hear behind me is a grunted, goddammit, like that. Kind of like the words goddammit, but said with a Spanish accent. That's when I suddenly realize I'm in the front row with my back to the field. Therefore, the ball might have been catchable by the Yankee first baseman, and I turn around, and there is the Yankee first baseman, Felipe Alou. Felipe Alou, the future manager of the Montreal Expos and San Francisco Giants, in what was the last season of his major league career. Felipe Alou, standing there, hands on hips, looking like he could kill me, because whereas it's my ball, the ball was in the stands, I did not interfere with him. If I had gotten out of the way, he could have leaned in and made the catch. My immediate thought, which was not to apologize, but was to say what I said. Why didn't you say something? The ball bounces off my hand. I realize now that my hand is now 6 or 8 times its normal size already. Felipe Alou just looks at me like he could spit and kill me with his spit and walks back towards the playing field. And the ball bounces back into the stands and somebody else gets it because the ball was hit so hard and so high that when it hit my hands, it bounded back at least 20 rows. So now my hand hurts. I have interfered not with a baseball still in play, but almost. I have cost the Yankees an out. And on the next pitch, Fritz Peterson throws, Rico Petrocelli swings and singles to left field. The first hit of the ball game. Petrocelli would be retired a moment later on a double play ball to end the second inning. In the third inning, the Red Sox went down to Fritz Peterson, 1-2-3. In the fourth inning, Aparicio, Fisk, somebody else, all outs. As the fifth inning began and Orlando Cepeda came up again, it became clear to me I had cost Fritz Peterson a no-hitter. Because I did not get out of the way of Felipe Alou, because I did not remember where I was on the field, relative to the field anyway, because I forgot, because I turned my back, I had cost Fritz Peterson a no-hitter against the Red Sox, or at least the chance of a no-hitter, and now we were in the fifth inning and there had not been another hit. I was responsible for that, not a no-hitter. Cepeda grounded out, and up comes Rico Petrocelli, who has the only Boston hit so far, courtesy of me. He flies out, and now there's two out in the fifth inning, and the only hit is the one Petrocelli nominally got. He will get credit for it in the baseball encyclopedia, but it's mine. Fritz Peterson lost a no-hitter when an idiot 14-year-old fan did not get out of the way of Yankee first baseman Felipe Alou pursuing a foul pop-up, which he must have just given up on because he saw this gigantic 14-year-old kid in his way. Dwight Evans came up. I believe he was still a rookie with the Red Sox that year. He should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is not. He had the best throwing arm I ever saw on any outfielder, and he played for the Red Sox, I think, until like last week. To some degree, I was actually relieved when what happened next happened next. Dwight Evans hit a home run. Dwight Evans hit a home run. Of course, he shouldn't have been batting, I guess, or maybe Fritz Peterson would have been pitching him differently if he'd been carrying the no-hitter he should have had into the fifth inning. In that other timeline, who knows what would have happened. But in any event, Evans homered. I was not the cause of that directly, only indirectly. And Fritz Peterson pitched the entire game having given up only those two hits. The home run that beat him 1-0. Dwight Evans' home run turned out to be the only run scored in the game, 1-0. And of course, the Rico Petrocelli single that I caused. I cannot tell you how badly I felt. It is literally true that no matter what happened to my hand, and it did not break, but it was swollen for, let's see, that's July 2nd, 1973. I want to say it was still swollen into the late 80s. It hurt, but by no means did I feel that pain compared to the pain of costing Fritz Peterson a no-hitter. My goodness, I never felt more guilt in my life about anything, before or since. And I wrote Fritz Peterson a letter. I said, if you'd like to come out and punch me before one of the games, I'll be here. You can find me any day behind the dugout. Just let me know when. I'm sorry. It's my fault. Years later, there was a play called the Bartman Ball play in a Chicago Cubs playoff game when they were on the verge of going to the World Series. This was when their nearly century-old streak of never having won the World Series since 1908 was still in full flower, and they were playing the Florida Marlins, and a fly ball was hit down the left field line, and it was the legal play for the fans. It was in the stands, and it was not interference, as mine had not been interference, but this poor man, Steve Bartman, reacted the way I did to my foul pop-up with Rico Petrocelli on July 2nd, 1973, and he was in the front row down the left field line at Wrigley Field, and I was in the front row down the first baseline at Yankee Stadium, and we were joined through the decades by what happened next to each of us. Bartman reached up for the ball, it bounced off his hands, and he turned around to see the Cubs left fielder looking at him, hands on hips, as if, why didn't you get out of the way? I could have caught that ball. And of course, the Cubs' lead in the game then collapsed utterly. They gave the opportunity back to the Marlins, and the Cubs did not go to the World Series that year and would not go to the World Series and would not win the World Series for another, what, 13 years, 2016? And Steve Bartman to this day has to hide himself, so that people don't know it's him. Because that left fielder made a big deal about the play he did not make. He kind of gave up on the ball, too, just as that Yankee first baseman did. And here's the punchline to it. If you don't know it already, the left fielder in the Cubs play in 2003 with Steve Bartman was named Moises Alou. He was the son of Felipe Alou, my first baseman, who didn't, as I suggested to him many years later in recounting this story, he did not shove me out of the way. Number one, he would have spared me the pain in my hand, and more importantly, he would have spared me the guilt. I don't think his son had that opportunity to shove the guy who was in the stands and much higher up from the field than Moises Alou was, the way the stands were configured at Wrigley Field. He was maybe 15 feet above the playing field rather than where I was, level with Felipe Alou, where he could have easily knocked me down and I would have gone, nice catch, Felipe. In any event, I never heard back from Fritz Peterson, but years after that, and in fact, years after the Bartman play, sure enough, what happens? But I am doing the Old Timers Day public address announcing with my friend, the late Hall of Famer, Bob Wolf. And Fritz Peterson comes back for Yankees Old Timers Day. And I'm standing there before the game, and he introduced himself. And I said, we've kind of met before. I said, do you remember a game in 1973 that you lost to the Red Sox? He went, Dwight Evans homer, the 1-0 game. I went, yes. And I said, do you remember the Rico Petrocelli hit earlier in the game? Yeah, it was a base hit. I said, no, the foul ball before it that Felipe Alou did not catch because some kid did not get out of the way. He went, yeah, kinda. I said, I was the kid. No kidding. And I said, no kidding. I wrote you a letter offering you to the opportunity to come punch me in the nose. He laughed like anything. I said, you remember that? He goes, no. I'd love to tell you it was otherwise. I'd love to tell you that he'd harbored a grudge all that year. I'd love to tell you that he punched me in the nose on Old Timers Day. He did not. He did not. So there are many memories of Fred Ingles Fritz Peterson, and most of the recollections of him will always center around the Mike Kekich exchange and the wife to be named later and all the rest. Or perhaps in another timeline, in another world of sports, we remember the fact that his earned run average was the lowest among all the pitchers who ever pitched at Yankee Stadium for a full-time basis. about 1,000 innings or so or more, better than Whitey Ford and Lefty Gomez and Red Ruffing and all the other Yankee Hall of Famers. People will remember Fritz Peterson for a variety of reasons, maybe even as the announcer, the color announcer for the World Hockey Association team in New York. And I will remember him because I cost him a no-hitter. Fritz Peterson was 82 years old. And yes, I assumed he'd held a grudge all those years. I really did hesitate to address him, but he introduced himself and did not punch me, as Felipe Alou did not push me out of the way. Wish he had. I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray on guitars, bass, and drums. Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. It was produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, were arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend Tony Kornheiser. Everything else, including costing Fritz Peterson his no-hitter, was pretty much my fault. I mean, I was looking for the umpire to call fan interference on me. I may have even said that. What about fan interference? Come on, get me out of this. That's Countdown for this, the 204th day until the 2024 presidential election and the 1,197th day since Dementia J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option. Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system. Use fan interference to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bulletins as the news warrants. Fritz, I'll always be sorry. Till next time, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.